Blog Talk Radio.
I am the nation. I was born on July 4th, 1776, and the Declaration of Independence is my birth certificate. The bloodlines of the world run in my veins because I offered freedom to the oppressed. I am many things and many people. I am the nation. I am 200 million living souls and the ghost of millions who have lived and died for me. I am Nathan Hale and Paul Revere. I stood at Lexington and fired the shot heard round the world. I'm Washington, Jefferson, Patrick Henry. I'm John Paul Jones, the Green Mountain Boys, and Davy Crockett. I'm Lee and Abe Lincoln. I remember the Alamo, the Maine, and Pearl Harbor. When freedom called, I answered and stayed until it was over there. I left my heroic dead in Flanders fields and in the steaming jungles of Vietnam. I am the Brooklyn Bridge, the wheatlands of Kansas, and the granite hills of Vermont. I am the coal fields of the Virginias and Pennsylvania, the fertile lands of the West, the Golden Gate and Grand Canyon. I sprawl from the Atlantic to the Pacific. 3 million square miles. I'm more than 3 million farms. I'm forest, field, mountain, and desert. I'm quiet villages, and I'm cities that never sleep. You can look at me and see Ben Franklin walking down the streets of Philadelphia. I'm Babe Ruth in the World Series. I'm 130,000 schools and colleges and 326,000 churches where my people worship God as they please. I'm a ballot dropped in a box. I am an editorial in a newspaper. And I'm a letter to a congressman. I'm Thomas Edison, Albert Einstein. I'm Horace Greeley, Will Rogers, and the Wright brothers. I'm George Washington Carver, Daniel Webster, and Jonas Salk. I'm Walt Whitman, Thomas Paine, Tom Sawyer, and Walt Disney. Yes, I am the nation, and these are the things that I am. I was conceived in freedom, and God willing, in freedom I'll spend the rest of my days. May I possess always the integrity, the courage, and the strength to keep myself unshackled, to remain a citadel of freedom and a beacon of hope to the entire world. I am the nation.
Good evening, ladies and gentlemen, and welcome to Patriot Education. My name is Terry Rowland. I'm your hostess for this evening. And as always, we are brought to you through the good offices of www.patriotfamilies.com, a great group of people who believe in the principles on which this nation was founded, and also take to heart that they are this nation. We were founded, ladies and gentlemen, on certain principles of liberty, including rights given to us by our Creator and specified in the Declaration of Independence and again in the United States Constitution. The Bill of Rights, the 10 amendments that follow the body of the Constitution, tell us that there are certain privileges, rights we have, that come from our Creator, and government's role is to safeguard these rights. They do not come from government. They are not given to us by government. Government's job is to protect them. Most of you know that I work in a middle school. I hear 6th, 7th, and 8th graders tell me that they have the right to freedom of speech, which in their minds, immature as they are, means that they can say anything they want and there will be no consequences. They are children. They think like children. Our public schools are supposed to be educating them to become, eventually, adults, functioning citizens in this republic who understand their rights and understand that government's job is to protect those rights. But unfortunately, we live in a time of political correctness. What happens is that children are being in that they are told that they should be seen and not heard unless what they say is pleasing to those in power. The kids that I work with have a tendency to think of their rights as meaning they have total autonomy and run the entire universe, especially their classrooms. Explaining to them that your right to freedom of speech is protected by the government, but the right of someone else to an equal freedom of speech that may disagree with what you have said, given your right, is something they need to understand. When they are faced with a government and a media that spends most of its time touting the wonders of freedom of speech for only those whose speech is publicly acceptable. In other words, if it parrots liberal progressive ideas. Today, I had a couple of young men in my classroom who, like most young males, are stuffed to the eyebrows with testosterone and have no clue what to do with it. Their version of freedom of speech usually winds up not coming from their mouth, but from their fists. The idea that someone else disagrees with them or does something that they don't like means, oh, quick, let's punch him. I was doing my very best to express to these young gentlemen that one can disagree respectfully without punching somebody who thinks differently from oneself. It was an uphill battle, and I'm not sure that I actually got it across. Our public schools, ladies and gentlemen, are doing their very best to turn our children into permanent infants who say, think, and do only what government tells them is appropriate, right, or positive. Because they're kids and totally lacking in self-control, they don't quite understand that the freedom to speak your mind carries with it the consequences of doing so. Those consequences may very well be, once they are out in the public realm and no longer protected by a watchful administration that suspends them if they get into a tussle, wind up in giving them a broken jaw or possibly vandalism done to their property. They are unaware, because they are children, that when you say what you believe, not everybody is going to agree with you. It's difficult for many adults to understand this as well. It seems to be particularly difficult among the liberal progressive public these days. In other words, I can say that I dislike a particular mode of living and understand that someone would hear this and think that I was condemning them because their mode of living was different from mine, and fire back with, well, I don't like the way you live either, and generally it doesn't devolve into a fist fight or a wrestling match or pulling one's revolver or rifle and whatever and blowing somebody away. Children don't understand this because they think very directly, particularly male children. And believe me, I'm not trying to be sexist here, but men and women are different. You know, that actually made the cover of Time about, 20 years ago. Somebody finally figured it out. But kids are not being allowed to grow up with all of the anti-bullying and anti-racism and anti-offensive talk and so on and so forth, that they get fed in school. They're terribly confused by the time they get out from under the protection of administration and teachers and so on and so forth. And they don't understand why telling their boss that what he said was stupid will get them fired. During my long life, I have learned that There are some people with whom one's disagreement should remain silent, purely and simply to preserve one's own livelihood or one's own life. I would not, for instance, stand in the middle of a predominantly Muslim neighborhood and scream, "I hate Allah." Not only is it provocative, it's stupid. But kids don't understand this. They do not understand because our media and our government are spending so much time trying to be politically correct that they have lost the understanding that this nation was founded on the idea of real diversity, that one's lifestyle, one's religion, one's political beliefs belong to you as an individual. You can have any opinion, but you cannot expect or demand that others must agree with you 100%, 100% of the time. I remember years ago reading a novel by the British author Dick Francis, in which one of his characters was talking about the fact that they couldn't figure out how the United States had lasted as long as it had, given the fact that everybody's always protesting about something vocally and very loudly, and we haven't killed each other off yet. And that's the secret. Our founding fathers understood that refusing to allow the citizen to vent his or her opinions, feelings, concerns, and anger merely puts a very tight lid on a pot of steam and encourages that pot to blow up, scalding anyone within reach. They knew that if people were not allowed to express their anger and frustration with their government, that they would silently and secretly join together to, in effect, blow up the pot of steam, and chaos, in which many innocents would be hurt, would result. Our kids need to understand what our founding fathers understood, that saying what you believe is the right thing to do, but expecting everyone else to agree with you is not. I've listened to some of the children make remarks about people of different faiths, different races, different cultures that show me a lot about the kind of family atmosphere in which they live. Kids in middle school, ladies and gentlemen, parrot their parents' opinions. They're still young enough that they believe what their parents believe. But they are beginning to approach adulthood and trying to find their feet in a very difficult and very frightening larger world. They don't understand that what they say and what they hear at home is not what everybody in school says and hears at home. All of my friends in the chat room are talking about the fact that everybody has opinions, and we all want to express them. And this is part of being human. Learning more about other cultures, other ways of living, other belief systems is part of growing up. That doesn't mean that you have to ditch all of the values taught to you by your parents. It just means that exposure to other cultures and other ideas gives you a better, I guess, smorgasbord from which to choose and against which to weigh those things you were taught. Very few of us find out what we truly believe when we're 12 years old. Very, very few. There are exceptions. Having a visitation from the Blessed Virgin Mary at Fatima might do it for you, or a peak experience of an out-of-body visit to heaven, as in the popular movie and book, Heaven is Real. But generally, kids aren't ready to be exposed to a great many different viewpoints and make an intelligent choice or an intelligent comparison between them. Yet, political correctness in our public schools is telling them that there is no right and wrong, there is only different from me. It's very, very difficult, ladies and gentlemen, to walk the fine line under our current educational system between teaching children and exposing them to new ideas and buying into and having to parrot the politically correct idea that all systems are right and all cultures are right and all belief paths are right without driving the poor little things even crazier than they already are. I don't know how many of you have dealt with a group of youngsters of that age. If you haven't worked in a classroom, you probably haven't. If you've worked with kids in recreational activities or in clubs, organizations like Boy Scouts or Girl Scouts, you understand a bit about how they feed off of each other. My friend Cal says that we're teaching kids you're right no matter what you view or think, and other people have to accept you, and you don't have to accept them. And that is where we are right now. That's what political correctness and the way that it's approached in schools is building. There seems to be, in the higher levels of educational philosophy, a movement toward the idea that you cannot have pride in our culture as Americans, that somehow or other, American culture, with all its diverse bits and pieces from every known culture on the world, is somehow wrong no matter what, and that we are arrogant, as our current president stated on his apology tour shortly after he was elected the first time around, and that somehow or other we should walk about with our heads lowered, humbly begging the rest of the world to let us join into their cultural mindset because we are obviously totally lacking a culture of our own. And it's this aspect of political correctness, this misunderstanding that Cal Living was talking about, that somehow or other we are always right, but we can't be right because that means somebody else has to be wrong. Well, in my life, I have studied and investigated a lot of different old belief systems and cultural attitudes and ways of living. I am quite content with my own. I have no desire to adopt any other culture or any specific belief system because I am, for good or ill, an individualist. I believe, as I have always believed, that I should, can, make judgments about what I see as the way the world works. And I should be flexible enough to change that viewpoint if I discover facts or situations in which my worldview does not work. I have always enjoyed history and world cultures because I find people interesting. Not because they are all alike, but because they are all vividly and delightfully different. But because I am an adult, this difference doesn't frighten me or make me want to run and hide from those who think differently from myself. It intrigues me, it interests me, and I look for the common ground. Children are not mature. that's intrinsic in being a child. They do not have the life experience or the intellectual capability at their young, immature ages to be able to differentiate between appreciating another culture and espousing all of its values. And yet public schools are basically telling them that they need to be protected, like little children, from being offended or being challenged, but they should be able to think like mature adults in their ability to accept that which is very different from what they know and believe. Like every liberal progressive viewpoint, it is an oxymoron. Our public schools are riddled with oxymoronic programs. Everything from, oh, we can't fail them because they'll feel bad about themselves, but if they graduate high school and don't know how to read, it's perfectly okay for them to not be able to keep a job because we will keep them a child and give them plenty of welfare money so that they can feel good about themselves then. And yet, we need a productive workforce who can compete globally. Like I said, oxymoronic. The problem that I have with liberal progressive ideas, whether they're in our public schools, in the White House, in Congress, in our state houses, in our civic governmental offices, is that none of it makes any sense because they want everything to be yin and yang at the same time. They want night to be day and day to be night so that we walk around in a dim twilight and there is no firm ground on which we can stand. There are no rights and wrongs. There are only differences, like the idiotic statement that there is no bad behavior, only communication we don't understand. One of the reasons that our founding fathers believed in education being made available to all citizens was that they understood an informed citizenry is the only type of citizenry that can govern itself. They did not see public education as a method of indoctrinating children into specific belief systems or cultural ideology. They saw public education as an opportunity to learn about things you wouldn't learn at home. Because no matter how well educated your parents are, nobody in this world knows everything about everything. Although many of my students think I do, and I spend a lot of time every day telling them, no, I don't. But I do like to learn about things, and that is what makes it look like I know everything. I have an inquiring mind, and one of the things I try to do in my job is to encourage my students to have inquiring minds as well. Political correctness does not permit an inquiring mind. Political correctness nurtures and supports and attempts to create minds that are as malleable as cottage cheese and just about as interesting. My parents taught me that I was given a brain in order to use it, to explore, to examine, to question, to seek, to look for answers, and if those answers didn't sound right, to ask questions about them until I figured out what was wrong with them or where I was misinterpreting. I try to create an atmosphere in my classroom that does that for my students. There are many aspects of the current educational philosophy with which I disagree, but there are some with which I strongly agree. I am strongly in favor of cross-subject teaching, I like the idea, letting children see the relevance of mathematics to science, and science to history, and history to language arts, and all the way around the circle. Because all of the things we teach them in their four core areas of study should operate together to create a functioning, lifelong learning brain. But unfortunately, instead of really relating one subject to another, the kids are being given an incoherent worldview. It is not cross-relating subjects to use examples for science of a woman with an illegitimate child trying to decide by DNA testing which of six different men she slept with fathered the baby. The scenario is not the norm, in spite of what progressives would like to have you think. I believe in using technology. My friend Eco in the chat room said, smart kids turn on the computer and listen to the real history of the country. And yeah, it's there. The one thing that actually got me to play around and learn how to use my computer and the internet was the wealth of information that I could access. I am an information junkie. I admit it, proudly, as a matter of fact. And it mattered to me. I could see a use. And in a sense, that understanding of technology is what I would like our children to have. Not that technology allows them to make nasty remarks about kids they don't like or play video games with people all over the world, but that it gives them access to information. That's what we want them to learn while they are in school. That information, knowledge, is of value for its own sake. I understand the need to prepare children to enter the working world. But I do not see that as indoctrinating them to fit into a niche in a collective where they are tracked from age 5 and slotted into the specific job that government believes they should fill. It is this dehumanizing tendency of liberal progressive educational theory that frustrates and angers me. Because, like political correctness, it presupposes that if you just pass enough laws, you can eliminate the human spirit from human beings and make them docile and obedient and peaceful and supportive of your power. I have worked in education, ladies and gentlemen, for over 35 years, both on an individual basis as a private tutor and in classroom environments as a substitute and as ISS coordinator, which is my fancy title. And I know that it is not possible to individually teach every single child in a classroom in the way that that given child learns best with our current system. That is why I believe in the possibilities of technology to give us a better shot at least providing some individualized instruction as well as general classroom teaching. But so far, what I've seen in public schools, and granted, I have not been to everyone in the country. I work in one in a specific demographic in a specific part of the country with certain values and ideals and so on and so forth that may not match everybody else. But in general, public schools should be pretty much the same nationwide, in the sense that they offer that opportunity of learning to the best of one's capability to every child. Technology can do this for us, but not if it's only used to pour more and more standardized testing into classrooms and use that to measure teacher expertise and children's knowledge and how they relate to gaining knowledge. I am not a big fan of a test every other day, because I have seen with our current mania for testing everything what it does to the kids as far as understanding the value of knowledge. I'd say 75 to 80% of the kids think of learning as memorizing it short term so you can spit it back out on test and then forgetting you ever heard it. I had a sixth grader today who, for some strange reason, couldn't really grasp the fact that in 1861, the United States flag, the Union flag, had 34 stars on it, and couldn't understand why there weren't 50 of them, as there are on today's flag. This child is studying American history. Okay. He has gotten to the point of the Civil War. He has no clue, absolutely none, about historical time. Some of the things that he came up with, like the discussion kind of veered off to when Alaska and Hawaii joined the Union, and when I told him it was 1959, he said, oh, well, that must have been the same year they dropped bombs on Hawaii. And no clue that that was 13 years before Hawaiian statehood during World War II. This is not uncommon for this age group. It becomes less common as they progress up through middle school. But children have difficulty understanding historical time. It's only when they get, between the ages of 13 and 18 that they begin to grasp that time went on before they got here. To most children, everything is now. And it's part and parcel of the way children think and react to their world. It's also part and parcel of some philosophical disciplines that tell you to live in the now, but it doesn't quite mean the same thing as the kids live in the now. It's very difficult for them to understand a timeline because there isn't any real teaching going on about what timelines mean. They're being used as a way to put facts in some kind of recognizable order so they can be spit back out on the next test. Without the child understanding anything about what the significance of a timeline is, or that the world didn't always look the way it does now, and that people of other times weren't stupid because they didn't just pick up a telephone to call President Lincoln, because they have no understanding that the telephone didn't exist then. All of this has been exacerbated by the educational philosophy that says we want children to learn, but we only want them to learn enough to be a functioning cog in the progressive wheel. We don't want them to think. We just want them to parrot progressive ideology and progressive viewpoints and political correctness with some vague understanding that, there was once somebody named Hitler and that states belong to the Union and Chicago is in Illinois, without actually recognizing where Illinois is. That's another thing, but I won't get into that tonight. Our kids are so bombarded, ladies and gentlemen, with experimental educational philosophical changes that it's a wonder they even remember how to tie their shoes. We are spending so much money, pouring money into our public schools. And a friend of mine today at school said that, you know, it's ridiculous. Money can't buy you a brain or teach you how to use it if you just basically sit there like a lump and ignore everything your teacher says and then complain that she doesn't like you when you fail for the year. And yes, I know, Cal, it's obey the government because the government knows better than you do. And the best way to keep any people subjugated is to keep them ignorant and afraid. And our public schools, with things like political correctness and there is no bad behavior, only communication we can't understand, and everybody needs to accept me because I'm special and everybody gets a trophy, are doing the very best they can to keep our kids ignorant. Not ignorant of facts, at least progressively approved facts, but ignorant of the fact that the world doesn't work that way. There are a lot of policies that public schools have put in play in order to, quote-unquote, protect our children that are doing the exact opposite. Our kids are being told that their world is bounded by benevolent dictators who can make all their decisions for them, and thus ensure that they will never make a wrong move, a mistake, or fail at anything. And yet, also telling them that they must have skills in order to compete. But actually, you're not supposed to compete. Ridiculous, ladies and gentlemen. You can't tell children that competition is bad out of one side of your mouth and then out of the other side tell them we have to compete with the rest of the world in order to have a viable life and the kinds of things we want. Is it any wonder that so many young people entering the workforce don't last very long in a job? When this is the climate they have been educated in for 12 to 16 years, that somehow or other, if you're just sweet, kind, compassionate, and agree with everybody, the world is going to give you what you want, and if it doesn't, you are a victim and have to sue somebody. Our president wants a qualified workforce. To our president, a qualified workforce is a collection of board. Not human, not individual, not thinking beings, but happy, contented drones in the machine of progressive society. We do not need to teach our children, ladies and gentlemen, we do not need to teach our children that they are perfect. What we need to teach our children is that they are human and they will make mistakes. And if they do not put forth the maximum effort, they are likely to fail in their endeavors. And we need to teach them to examine information. We need to teach them to be able to read and speak and write the language of our nation. We need to teach them how to think mathematically and use that mathematical thinking to solve problems related to the real world. Everything from, did I buy enough carpet for my living room, to, wait a minute, you're taking more out of my paycheck than you're supposed to. We need to teach them history and not just sanitized or revisionist history that shows what progressives want them to believe about the role of our nation in the history of the world or the climate change that we are responsible for or the evil that we have done because we didn't care about other people. But real history, from the viewpoint of the people who made it. One of the hardest things I have to do, ladies and gentlemen, is to get the kids that I work with to understand that you cannot look at the actions of 19th century people through the eyes of the 20th century world and make judgments about their actions. You can only make judgments about a person's actions within a society if you understand the parameters of that society. I get really, really tired of the racism game. I get very frustrated when I hear young black students say that George Washington was a racist because he owned slaves. Looking back at history and understanding the reasons why things happened requires an understanding of the cultural climate in which those things happened. In the 1800s, Europeans and Americans all believed, because they were taught it in their schools and colleges and churches, that being Caucasian meant that you were a member of a superior class of human beings, and that God had created Caucasian peoples as inherently smarter, better than any other race. In effect, you were brainwashed, if you like that term. You were taught by every authority figure who was given that authority to educate you that this was the way of the universe. And so, because you heard it in school and you heard it in the pulpit and you heard it at the dinner table, as far as you were concerned, that was God's law. Science and genetics were in their infancy. They had not yet gotten past the toddler stage. Understanding that, being able to put yourself in that time frame and understand the decisions that were made were based on what was taken to be ultimate truth at that time. It's the same kind of foolishness that progressives perform when they revise history and show everybody in the United States in 1858, everybody who happened to be white, as vicious, uncaring, overlords who despised anybody who was of a different race simply because they were bad people. And obviously their descendants are going to do the same thing because, contrary to genetic understanding, you come equipped with the attitudes of 1852 when you're born. Progressives love science when science confirms their worldview. And they manipulate science so that they can love it. Kind of like a foolish man or a foolish woman marries and supposes they can redesign their spouse into the person they want them to become. Another reason why progressivism doesn't make any sense, but then again, we know that. Understanding of the way our world works, ladies and gentlemen, has to be based on an understanding of history and an understanding of the fact that human beings are intensely curious and want to know everything. And we explore and we experiment and we try and we discover new things that make us revise our worldview and look back at the past and say, wait a minute, we did this wrong. But we must look back at the past and say we did this wrong and understand why. Not just condemn what was done wrong and beat ourselves and flog ourselves for the actions of our ancestors, as if we were personally responsible for what they did. We aren't. We are responsible for what we do now. And again, progressives do not want us to teach our children such a ridiculous idea as personal responsibility. Because when you do teach people that they are personally responsible for their actions, that means they have control over their own lives. And you cannot allow that in progressive utopia. Because if you give people control, they will do things that you don't approve of or that might disrupt your power or create a problem that you can't solve by making a new law. Since I work with a very difficult age group, and believe me, you have to be a little bit unbalanced to deliberately work with middle school students, I see every single day examples of the progressive mind. The mind that says, well, if I just cry and scream and holler loudly enough, I can make the world do what I want it to because I am the world. I am the world. And if the world doesn't do what I want, then obviously it's got rotten, evil, horrible people in it, and I need to eliminate them because they're in my way of my perfect world. And when you stop to think about it, the progressive political correctness, the idea that there is no good or evil, only difference, stands out for exactly what it is. A soothing, poisoned apple to feed people so that they will believe that they are of value and important and special and that everybody else thinks so. Progressives, if they actually think, really, really, really don't believe 90% of the stuff that comes out of their mouths. The ones who don't think do believe it. But the ones who hold the power and carry the name and wield that power don't believe a word of it. They know it's garbage. But they are masters at manipulation, just like a parent manipulates a 13-year-old. Progressives in power manipulate the children that they are keeping children for their entire lives. When you work with middle school students, you understand that they are driven by emotional responses. Very few of them think. And it is natural that that be the case, because they are going through tremendous physical, emotional changes during the onset and beginning and maturing through puberty. It's hard for most adults to put themselves back in the mind that they had when they were 12 or 13 or 14. Most of us don't ever want to go back there because we don't want to relive the angst and fear and pain and tears and frustration of being that age again. Progressives want everybody to stay that age. They use emotion to quote-unquote nudge and steer and guide their power base into doing what progressive leaders want them to do. It's kind of Nero's bread and circuses. If we allow progressive education, ladies and gentlemen, to continue along the path that it is taking, we will not recognize the country that our grandchildren will live in. It will be as foreign to us as 12th century Japan would be to us right now. Can't provide you with a quick fix or a magic wand that will change the direction overnight, magically, and we can have the perfect educational system and the perfect governmental system and the perfect economic system, because nobody can get us that. Human beings don't make perfect anything, because human beings aren't perfect. And that is what we need to teach our children, that they are not perfect, but they can be better people tomorrow than they are today. My friend Bill said a couple of weeks ago that he tries to be a better man today than he was yesterday. And I honor him for that, because that is an understanding that many people do not have of what it means to be a human being, especially what it means to be an adult human being. We are all works in progress, ladies and gentlemen. We change and grow and develop and see new ways of doing things and accept new ideas and new forms of living, because we as a species are adaptable. It's why we've been around as long as we have, and hopefully why we'll continue to be around for many, 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 many more generations. Because any species that cannot adapt dies. But our children are being told that they do not have to adapt, that the world will adapt to them, that their freedom of speech means nobody's allowed to disagree with them. They're being told that there is no difference between fact and opinion. And believe me, having tried to teach these kids that there is one is sort of like building the Transcontinental Railroad all by myself. our current educational system, ladies and gentlemen, is trying to graft together two completely opposite methods of helping children learn. It's trying to graft onto a traditional classroom setting with a teacher and a group of students, 20 to 25 strong, to individualized learning that can only be accomplished in small group, technology-assisted learning environments. And it's trying to do it by vilifying the teaching profession and making teachers into machine tenders rather than teachers. I don't express my political opinions in my classroom, not because I'm ashamed of them or I fear for my job or I'm worried that I'm going to be retaliated against or I'm going to hurt somebody's feelings. No, that's not the reason. The reason is because that is not the appropriate place for me to do so. As a person who is instructing and guiding children, my job is to model what being a lifelong learner is. I have to examine dispassionately and objectively many different cultures, societies, systems, political and economic, in order to know enough about them to help children understand them. That is what teachers do over and above teaching kids how to add and subtract fractions or measure something using a scientific notation or understand the metric system or be able to write a coherent paragraph or remember that the Constitutional Convention was in 1789. Okay. Teachers are there to show kids how to learn, as well as give them the information and skills that they need to become lifelong learners. I am not there to turn out happy little libertarians or happy little Democrats or happy little progressives or happy little Republicans or communists or socialists or anything else. I am not there to teach them that my values should be their values. I am there to live by my values and in the process fulfill my purpose as a teacher. I believe that calling, that profession, that vocation is one of the most important that any human being can take on. Because in addition to our ability to adapt, what keeps us going as a species is that we can learn and transmit the knowledge that we have gained to the next generation. Progressives want you to believe that human beings are really not very nice creatures, unless they're progressives in power, and that the best thing we can do for this holy planet on which we live is to reduce the number of them so that there are fewer people to challenge progressive power. Agenda 21 has come up in the chat room, and that's part and parcel of progressive thinking. If we just redesign human beings so that they are no longer innovators, individuals, but members of a community, a group, a village, then we can easily control them and make sure that nobody does anything bad to anybody else, because obviously they will see how wonderful the world is and keep us in power. And it comes down to that in the end, ladies and gentlemen. It comes down to power, as it always does. Progressives do not wish our children to gain the power over themselves that individual responsibility conveys. Progressives want our children to respect the power of government to control their lives and willingly stand up, put their arms out, and happily smile when the shackles are fastened. Because they believe, whether they express it or not, that humanity is destined to achieve godhood, and they are right close to being there themselves. It's Plato's Philosopher Kings all over again. The idea that those who are superlatively educated have some sort of toehold on the ladder to a heavenly throne and should be lifted by the adoring masses to that pinnacle of divinity. I had a youngster in my ISS classroom today who was sent to me about 2 hours before school ended because he got in a tussle with another student, horseplay kind of thing. And the current climate is that if you lay hands on another student without their permission, that's obviously an attack, and you should immediately be removed and kicked out of school because that's, you know, violence and we can't abide violence. Instead of accepting and understanding that adolescent males do this kind of thing because it's part of the growing process for them, progressive education is doing everything it can to reduce the ability of people to take personal responsibility by telling them that they don't have any. I told the young gentleman that if you understand that this is the policy and you decide you're going to go ahead and do it anyway, then take responsibility. Go ahead and do it anyway. But don't whine about how unfair it is that you get in trouble for it. You knew you would. So stand up, take it, and try to figure out whether or not it was worth it. Which probably makes me politically incorrect as all get out, but I really don't care. I know what kids do. I know what bullies do. And sitting around discussing how you'll befriend everybody who's being bullied if you like them, but you'll ignore them if you don't, which is what goes on in the mandatory anti-bullying program in our school, is not going to change young male human animals into sweet saints at the age of 13. It doesn't happen that way. Any more than you can turn a puppy into a kangaroo because kangaroos are nicer than puppies. I don't know whether they are or not, but it's just as likely. It's this whole political correctness garbage. This idea that somehow or other, if you prevent people from ever actually expressing anything except, hi there, the sun is out, today is Tuesday, have a nice day, that we will all embrace one another and live happily and communally ever after, drives me crazy. It really does. I don't have all that far to go either. But it's this inability to understand that if you're going to have freedom, you're going to live at risk. Because that's what freedom is. Whether it's freedom of religion, freedom of speech, the right to assembly, the right to petition government for redress of grievances, the right to bear arms, freedom of the press, trial by jury, freedom from unreasonable search and seizure, all of these things that are outlined in the Bill of Rights, they require personal responsibility. They do not say that government is going to fix it. What they say is you're responsible for the consequences of expressing and living out these freedoms. Government isn't. And if your interpretation of these freedoms cause harm to another person's body, mind, or property, then there are going to be consequences. Sometimes legal and governmental, sometimes a fist in the face. But understanding that what you do is your responsibility, not somebody else's fault, not because you're a victim, not because there is no bad behavior, only communication we don't understand, and you were just trying to tell me that you didn't have a good day today. Our kids are not being taught self-control, ladies and gentlemen, because self-control implies self-actualization. Individual liberty with individual responsibility, and progressives cannot have that in order to maintain their power. They have to be the kind, loving, giving parent who withholds a treat if you don't bob and weave and behave just as they tell you to. Progressives cannot allow our children to grow up because an adult questions. An adult says, okay, it's worth it to me to lose my property or my life to prevent a wrong. Progressives cannot permit your children to become a real adult, because a real adult understands that being free to choose means that you will sometimes choose wrongly. And when you do, you will bear the consequences, and others around you may very likely bear them too. We have spent billions of dollars, ladies and gentlemen, over the past 35 to 40 years trying to improve our public education system. And our kids are more ignorant and less prepared to go into the world as adults now than they were when my grandmother was in sixth grade. My grandmother, God bless her, understood that she was responsible for what she did. My grandmother grew up in southern Illinois. She was born at the end of the 19th century. She grew up in a climate that separated the races. And yet, anyone who came to her door hungry, no matter what color they were, got food. And anyone who needed help that she could give, got help. Not because she was being Lady Bountiful, because she wasn't. She was poor. She was left a widow with two daughters, aged 15 and 10, and had only a sixth grade education. But she put both of those daughters all the way through Catholic high school and grade school. And they became, one of them became a professional businesswoman. The other became an excellent mother who raised her daughters to believe that they could be and do anything they chose to be, and that there were no limits on their ability to choose. I am not saying that we need to go back to education as it was in 1897, or that we can or should turn the clock back to the mindset of the time. What I am saying is that we need to take a good, hard look at what we want our children to become. and a good, hard, objective look at what our public schools apparently want them to become. And make a decision. That we can make it better. We each have a voice, and we can use it. We each have a vote, and we can use that. We each have eyes and ears to see and listen to what is going on around us, and do our best to understand the ramifications of the actions of our leaders. We can teach our children the morality and the ethics that we believe will be guidelines for them to be good and decent adults. And we can stop expecting government to provide for them a moral and ethical education. That is not government's job, ladies and gentlemen. That is a parent's job. Our friend Cal says that we can make a difference, but can we come together when we seem to have different views that separate us? We've always had different views that separate us, Cal. Our nation was built on that. People fought over politics much more viciously in the first elections of our new nation than they do now. I mean, to the point of fist fights and tar and feathering the opposing candidate. But we managed to cobble together a working government and a working nation that became the light of freedom for the entire world. Because as many mistakes as we made throughout our history, we did the best we could to repair them and make ourselves a better nation today than we were yesterday. And yes, Cal, there is hope for us. There's always hope. It is lack of hope that kills us as an individual or as a nation. When we say, there's nothing I can do, the world's going to hell in a handbasket, I'll just sit and enjoy the ride, then we are giving up the very essence of our own humanity. I can't change the world all by myself. I know that. But I keep trying. I do what I can do. This show, for example. I keep working. And believe me, I'd love to retire. I get tired. I get really tired. It was awfully tough going back to school after a week off, and boy, do I hate alarm clocks. And if I have to hear one more kid say, but Mrs. Rowland, you promised, or can I have this, or not, and not understand that when I say no, it means no, I have to start every day explaining that. Another example of progressive education run amok. When I was a child, I understood that when somebody said no, they meant it. But today's kids apparently don't, because they have swallowed the negotiation pill that says, oh, well, if I just talk long enough and make her feel sorry for me, she'll give me what I want. And they get very, very, very taken aback when they discover that it doesn't work. It all comes back to the idea that freedom is risk, ladies and gentlemen. Political correctness is a lie because it implies that you can live a risk-free life, that you can express an opinion and everyone else will either nod politely and walk away or agree with you enthusiastically and tell you how wonderful you are. I don't lie to children. I don't lie to anybody. And I'm not talking about the social lies that when a friend says, I just got my hair cut, do you like it? And it looks absolutely horrible, but I don't necessarily tell her that because that would hurt her feelings for no good purpose. She can't very well go get the hair put back on. I'm talking about fundamental lies, like government will save you from yourself. Because I know government won't. And I refuse to tell children that it will. And I refuse to tell a child when he or she doesn't study and fails a test that it's okay and it was only because the teacher didn't like you and maybe you just weren't feeling good that day. I tell them the truth. You got the grade you earned. But in our politically correct world, our raising self-esteem educational system, our kids aren't getting any kind of truth that matters. What they're getting is indoctrination into the belief that the world is going to give you what you want because you deserve it, simply because you exist. My friend Gabra says that her husband says, why not? The barber leaves the hair on the floor just to get the smile from you, even if you dislike the haircut. Yeah, that's pretty much it. But most of our kids, the vast majority of our kids, are quite capable of learning and growing and becoming wonderful, but they can't do it by themselves, ladies and gentlemen. They need parents and teachers and ministers and counselors and doctors and nurses and all of the other professional people and loving people in their lives to help them grow up. Not by throwing them into a pond and saying swim or die, but by teaching them that sometimes learning to swim requires more effort than just saying, gee, I want to. And being there to give them a boost when they can't quite make it and show them that they can. It isn't about giving a child answers on a test to make your school averages look good and make the kid feel great because he got 100 when he had no clue what the questions were about. It's about setting up the possibility of some extra tutoring or sending home some extra work or taking a couple of minutes to make sure that that kid has actually written down what it is you've just told him to write in his notebook. And I agree with Kebra, swimming is a good lesson in life. You don't learn to swim by just lying there, waiting for government to do it for you. Our children need to be taught to swim. They need to be taught to get into the water and enjoy moving against it and keeping themselves afloat and making progress through it. Because being an adult is a great deal like swimming. You have to put forth effort to stay afloat and to have control over the direction in which you are proceeding. Being towed along behind a boat is not swimming, ladies and gentlemen. Our children are waiting to be towed, and we have to stop teaching them that somebody else will always make up to them for their own failures and wrong choices. We have to teach them not just academic skills, ladies and gentlemen, but the work ethic upon which this nation was built. The current stuff that's coming out of the White House, these ridiculous remarks that their spokespeople make about, well, people shouldn't have to work. What? Living is work. It takes effort to get out of a chair and walk to the bathroom, for heaven's sake. But we're teaching our kids that somebody's going to carry them there I know that's a rather crude analogy, but it's as close as I can come to the potential horrors of a future if we don't stand up and speak truth, if we don't get involved in our public schools and stop depending on government for how they are run. We need to start not at the national level, but at the local level, because that's how our nation began. When the Port of Boston was closed, the rest of the colonies didn't care until other ports were closed and other colonies had British troops quartered in private homes. And then all of a sudden, maybe Boston wasn't just that strange place up north that we don't really care about. We had something in common again. And we have more in common than we do in difference, ladies and gentlemen. And my friend Cal says, don't talk about bathrooms. Now they can choose to use whichever one they want because of their gender confusion. That's the biggest absurdity I've ever heard in my life, and not worthy of discussion. But that's part of the progressive perception of themselves as divine. God made you male, but if you don't like it, obviously you're right and God's wrong. I have a lot of difficulty with that one. I really do. The only way that I can see that that makes any sense is if there is a physical hormonal imbalance to the point that it affects thinking patterns, bodily functions, etc. And I don't think that there are many hermaphrodites outside of fiction. And don't worry about it, Cal. I'm not at all upset that you brought it up. It's just another example that goes along with this politically correct nonsense that is basically telling our kids that, you know, there isn't any reality unless we tell you there is. And it's the reality that we believe in and not the reality that you see every day. That somehow or other, if you just listen to government, reality becomes unreal, and that's okay because it makes you happy. I do not and never will understand the desire to have somebody else make one's decisions for them. I cannot remember any time in my life that I have chosen to let someone else decide for me what I should do, say, or think. It's an almost inconceivable concept to me. I really don't think that I'm that unusual, ladies and gentlemen. I don't think that I'm an anomaly of some sort, a sport, a member of a different species. I'm a human being. I like making my own choices. And I understand that when I make them, they may not be the right ones, and I may suffer negative consequences. And hopefully, I won't whine too much about it, and I'll learn from my bad choice. And I'll learn not to make that particular choice that way again. Thank you, Cal Living. I appreciate that. You're very kind. Ladies and gentlemen, I want to thank you all for being here, and I want to apologize for my missing in action status for the last couple of weeks. The combination of getting a new computer, finding out that my modem was as antiquated as, you know, a dodo bird, and that it didn't work with the computer or the telephone or anything else, it's not an excuse, it's just an explanation. I promise you, cross my heart and hope to spit, as my mother, an Irish woman, taught me to say instead of hope to die, because she swore up and down that if I said that, I probably would die. I will be here. I will be here every week, good Lord willing, and the creek don't rise. And I hope that you will be too. This is our chance, ladies and gentlemen, to interact with
90
one another,
seconds.
Support one another, believe in one another, even with our differences, and rejoice in the fact that we have a platform and the freedom to share our similarities and our differences, and delight in both. Have a wonderful evening, everyone. Please join me here again next Thursday for Patriot Education. Visit our website, www.patriotfamilies.com, where you'll find blog posts and connections to places and things and people who believe in this nation and everything that it stands for. May God bless you all, and as always, all my love to my greatest fan. Good night, ladies and gentlemen. Have a wonderful evening. See you next week.